A major theme of Parshas Matos and Maaseh is vengeance. Beginning of Parshas Matos, we deal with the war against Midian. Nikom nikmas b'nei Yisrael me'eis ha-Midyanim. The Torah is not mincing words about it. Nikom nikmas, avenge the Jews' quarrel with Midian. They massacred them, they killed all the men, they captured all the women, and so on, property. That's Parshas Matos. Later in Parshas Maaseh, we have an extensive, you know, more legalistic, rather than historic, but more legalistic section about the laws of the Rotzeach, the murderer, Rotzeach B'shogeg, the inadvertent murderer, manslaughter, the Goel Hadam, the blood revenger, and the Arei Miklat, the cities of refuge, the original sanctuary cities. And today, sanctuary city means something else. Back then, sanctuary city meant the city in which to which you ran when you had killed somebody B'shogeg. Discuss some more of the details, more of the halacha. But again, the Torah has the notion of blood revenge. There's really no other word for it. The idea of Goel Hadam, the avenger of blood. The idea that if someone's relative has been murdered, it is the right, the duty, the dispensation. We'll discuss exactly what the halacha is to kill the murderer, to avenge the murder of his relative. Looking around at some of the various articles on the internet, historians like to talk about how the idea of vendettas and feuds were a kind of, you know, pre-modern feudal notion when the law couldn't or wouldn't do anything about it. We have the system of blood revenge. The halakha is actually somewhat more complicated than that. The same Torah that gives us detailed instructions for criminal law, for beis dins or numerous capital crimes, there's an extensive system of both process and substance for criminal justice. Also, side by side, the Torah explicitly has an extensive discussion, too, of the system of blood revenge, the idea of Goel Hadam, and as we'll see, part of the discussion is going to involve the interplay of the judicial criminal system and the extrajudicial, the notion of vigilante justice meted out by the relative of the victim himself. And as we'll see, one of the most interesting questions is whether this halacha has any practical applicability. Now, obviously, most of us are not going to be in a position ever to either kill people ourselves or hire assassins or hitmen. Nevertheless, even working within the legal system, even working practically, realistically within the framework of modern society, there will be actual applications to the laws of Goel Hadam in contemporary times. There isn't much about it in the Shulchan Aruch. After the Talmudic discussion and some Rambam, much of the discussion is theoretical, academic, but as we'll see, there actually are a number of interesting tshuvos discussing Goel Hadam, from which we can learn both some actual practical halachas as well as values, as well as Torah's perspective on certain questions of revenge and justice. So in Parshas Maaseh, the Torah reiterates a number of times the charge or the permission. Well, that's one of the key questions we're going to discuss, whether Goel Hadam is an actual mitzvah or just a dispensation or a permission for the Goel Hadam to avenge the murder. The Torah says in Pasuk Yutes, Goel Hadam hu yamisses haratzeach, the blood avenger shall kill the murderer. When he meets him, befigro bo hu yamisenu, when he encounters him, he shall kill him. This is all if he's a deliberate murderer, if the murder had occurred out of hatred, with malice aforethought, and so on, obeiva, then the Goel Hadam again, yamisses haratzeach, befigro bo. Then it talks about an inadvertent murder, which we often call manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter in modern legal terms, an accident, something went wrong. Then he's supposed to go to the Eir Miklat. He's supposed to go to flee to the sanctuary city. He lives there. He resides there. Ad Mos HaKohen HaGadol, famous halacha. He stays in the Eir Miklat until the Kohen Gadol dies. There are many theories, a lot of speculation about why his term in the Eir Miklat is delimited by the lifespan of the Kohen Gadol. All kinds of different ideas. The Torah is very silent about it. A couple of novel ideas I saw yesterday, which were new to me at least, in the Chizkuni, B'char Shar. One of them suggests that ideally we'd like him to stay in the Eir Miklat, a kind of Mida K'neged Mida, for as long as the time he cut off from his victim's life, the amount of years his victim lost. The problem is there's no way to know that. We don't have prophecy. We don't have crystal balls. We don't know how long he would have lived. So we just pick the Kohen Gadol as a kind of vicarious person. The Kohen Gadol, it turns out, lived 25 years longer, so let's just presume that your victim would have lived 25 years longer. Obviously, it's not entirely persuasive. He himself points out, what if the Kohen Gadol is an old man? You probably didn't get to be Kohen Gadol when you were 14. It was probably at the apex of a long and distinguished spiritual career. So you're probably a lot older than the average pop, than the average member of society. But he says, you know, the Torah needed some kind of yardstick, so it picked the Kohen Gadol. Another theory was that the Kohen Gadol somehow, at least in the popular mind, bore some responsibility for enforcing justice. So if the Kohen Gadol was still alive and this fellow was leaving the Eir Miklat with impunity, people would all look disparagingly at the Kohen Gadol and say, he's walking around free and you're just sitting there at your desk, you know, doing the temple service. You know, what are you doing? Get up and do something about this. Again, why this is the Kohen Gadol's responsibility? You think he's a priest with avoda and doing spiritual things. You think justice was for the king or the Sanhedrin or Beis Din, something. Why we pick him exactly instead of the king or the chief of the law enforcement services? I don't know, but these are, again, speculation. Nobody really knows why the Kohen Gadol exactly, why it was contingent on the Kohen Gadol, but that's the halacha. He remains in the Eir Miklat, in the city of refuge, until the Kohen Gadol dies. If he leaves, if he leaves prematurely before the Kohen Gadol dies, then he may be killed with impunity. The Goel Hadam shall encounter him, outside the limits of the Eir Miklat, and he kills him. Ein lo dam, he has a dispensation, or even a mitzvah, we'll discuss soon, to kill the Rotzeh. Now, it's important to note, and we'll see this is going to be a big deal soon in the technical discussion, the Torah refers to Goel Hadam both in the context of a Rotzeh B'mezid, capital murder, a deliberate intended murder. That's the first part, so Goel Hadam, who misses a Rotzeh, that's talking about a Rotzeh B'mezid. The Torah also talks about the Goel Hadam later in the context of a Rotzeh B'shogeg, who has the right to go to the Eir Miklat. He too, if he leaves the Eir Miklat, he can also be killed by the Goel Hadam. As we'll see, the laws of Goel Hadam as applied to these different contexts are not entirely the same. Just in general, for some halakhic terminology, you know, the law has notions of murder and manslaughter has voluntary manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter, there are different degrees of murder. Halakha too has a similar array, maybe not quite as many levels, but also halacha has a variety of different levels between worst-case mezid and ones gomer. Basically, on the spectrum, we have mezid, deliberate, intentional, with forethought, with hasra, with warning. That's about the worst case you can have. In between, we have shogeg, which is inadvertent, but some level of culpability. You could have been more careful. You should have been more careful. That would be basically involuntary manslaughter. Voluntary manslaughter apparently is manslaughter where you're guilty of something, but there's some mitigating circumstance. You intended something, but maybe it's not as bad as capital murder. But shogeg is basically involuntary manslaughter. And ones means it's not your fault at all. You're driving and the car's brakes failed and you spun out of control and you hit something. That would be maybe an ones. In between these three major levels, mezid, shogeg, and ones, in between mezid and shogeg, we have an in-between level sometimes called shogeg karav lemezid, or different types of pshia, negligence. You're worse than a simple shogeg. You have a fair amount of culpability. You're not quite intentional, but there's enough that you're worse than an ordinary shogeg. On the other half, we have in between shogeg and ones, we have shogeg karav laones, where there's some level of culpability, but it's, you know, not really your fault. It's only a little bit your fault. We don't have precise definitions, just as the law doesn't really give always precise mathematical definitions in terms of probabilities. We don't really have anything more than these somewhat vague qualitative terms. Indeed, much of the discussion in Makos, where in the Tractate of Makos, where the laws of murder and Goel Hadam and cities of refuge are discussed, much of the discussion involves various cases, various fact patterns, where the debate actually is whether to classify certain cases as shogeg, as worse than shogeg, as less than shogeg. We have a lot of case law and a lot of somewhat ambiguous statements, but in general, these are, roughly speaking, the five categories that we have. In terms of penalty, only the first category, only mezid with hasra, with warning, is executed. The other four categories are not judicially punished. Shogeg goes to the Eir Miklat. If you are in between shogeg and mezid, then you do not go to the Eir Miklat. You have no right of sanctuary, but you still are liable to be killed by the Goel Hadam, which puts you obviously in a dangerous situation. And on the other hand, if you're less than shogeg and less than shogeg, but not absolutely an ones, again, you don't have to go to the Goel Hadam. You don't have to go to the Eir Miklat. There, I don't think that you are liable to being killed by the Goel Hadam. I'm not absolutely sure about that point. What we'll be discussing today is mostly the more serious cases, the more in murder, for whatever reason, Beis Din is not going to kill you, either because you lack hasra or you lack the 100% culpability of capital murder or bizman hazeh, where there is no beis din capable of dispensing capital justice, criminal justice. So we're going to be dealing largely with the Ratzeach B'Mezid, and we're going to have to try to figure out what are the laws of Goel Hadam as applied to such a murder. I meant in the case where you're between Shogi and Onus and you have some fractional level of culpability.
Then it should be, you should have more protection.
You mean if you don't have to go to the Ermei Klal, it wouldn't really make sense to say that it's a price. That is a persuasive argument. So you're probably right. I just didn't check it beforehand, so I don't want to say with certainty, but certainly it would be absurd to say that he's in more danger than the real Shogi, right?
Is
Goel
Hadam a person? I guess you would call it a I would assume that if somebody believes that he did something, that he killed him, he would have run as fast as he could to the Ermei Klal. But you have to have the Beit Din say, yeah, that's really the case. I mean, the Beit Din might...
Yes, and that's actually a very important question. It is practical, but that's actually a very important question, which I want to spend some time on soon. I'll get back to that in a few minutes, the question of process, about what standard of evidence, what types of rulings have to be issued.
So the
timing is something I'm not going to get into in too much detail. The Talmud does have an intricate discussion about the timing. He goes to the city of refuge before the trial, during the trial. Basin takes care of him. I'm not going to get into so much to that, but I will get into the fundamental question of what kind of finding do we have to have, what kind of court, what kind of official authoritative decision has to be made, if any, before the Goel Hadam is licensed to kill, so to speak. We'll get back to that in a few minutes.
Is there any Goel Hadam, or was he designated by Beis Din?
I'll discuss some of the parameters of who is the Goel Hadam soon. An important question. The Torah never defines it, but we will discuss that also soon. So first, in terms of what is Goel Hadam, as I keep alluding to this, is it a mitzvah? Is it a dispensation? Is it a defense in Beis Din? What exactly is Goel Hadam? So in Makos, where these discussions are, the Talmud brings a three-way dispute. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, the discussion here is about a Ratzeach B'Shogeg, who has already gone, let's say, to the Eir Miklat and then wandered out. Can he be killed? But he's killed by the Goel Hadam, the Torah says. Rabbi Yossi Aglili says, mitzvah biad Goel Hadam. The Goel Hadam actually has a mitzvah, a positive commandment to kill him if he can. Rishus biad Kol Adam. Anyone else has permission to do it, although no mitzvah. Rabbi Akiva says, rishus biad Goel Hadam. The Goel Hadam himself does not have a mitzvah, merely a rishus. The Kol Adam ain chayavin or chayavin aleh. There are varying texts in the Mishnah and in the Gemara. Nobody else has even a rishus. Some say that chayavin aleh, they're actually considered murderers if they kill him as vigilantes. The dispensation only applies to the Goel Hadam. The other text is ein chayavin aleh. The Rambam, most commentators have ein chayavin aleh. Ein chayavin aleh means it's not murder, but you shouldn't do it. It's still wrong. But Rabbi Kiva says the Goel Hadam has permission, rishus. Nobody else has permission. There is a third opinion the Gemara brings that nobody has permission, that until Beis Din rules that he's Chayav Misa, nobody has any business killing him. A Shogeg, you don't get killed at all by the Goel Hadam. The halacha follows Rabbi Akiva. Again, halacha in this area, we don't have standard Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Berurah and the standard codes. We turn to the Rambam usually in these cases. The Rambam codifies everything, regardless of how practical it is. The Rambam codifies the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. That is generally accepted by the poskim, that the Goel Hadam, even in the case of Shogeg, has a rishus, permission. Nobody else should be doing it, but the Goel Hadam himself does have permission to kill even a Ratzeach B'Shogeg if he chooses to leave the city of refuge. Now, what about Mezid? What would the halacha be by Mezid? So the Rambam himself, in one place, later in Hilchas Ratzeach, the second paragraph, he passes like Rabbi Akiva, that if the murderer leaves the city of refuge, the Goel Hadam has a reshus to kill him. But earlier in Hilchas Ratzeach, right at the beginning, the first couple of halachas, the introduction, the Rambam says, if a person murders, he is killed by the Goel Hadam, mitzvah biad Goel Hadam. The Rambam rules it's actually a mitzvah, and then the Rambam defines Goel Hadam. We'll return to this later, but the Rambam says, kol haroi liyerusha hu Goel Hadam, anyone who is in line for inheritance, we discussed this last week, we'll discuss this in more detail, what this means for the context of Goel Hadam. Anyone who is in line for the Yerusha is called the Goel Hadam, but this is in the context of Ratzeach B'Mezid. Many commentators seem to understand the Rambam that the Rishus, the whole Machlokas, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, the whole debate about Rishus or Mitzvah is only the Goel Hadam for a Ratzeach B'Shogeg, Ratzeach B'Mezid. The Rambam rules it is a Mitzvah. Now, interestingly, the Rambam, most commentators, do not list the Mitzvah of killing, avenging a murder as one of the 613 Mitzvahs. Ramban does. The Ramban says, Ramban has his famous little list of mitzvahs that the Rambam forgot, to use his terminology. So one of them is the mitzvah to avenge a murder, the mitzvah of Gol Hadam, number 13 of the mitzvahs essays that the Rambam forgot. The Ramban says it actually is a mitzvah. The Rambam has omitted it. The general defense for the Rambam, despite the fact that he says it is a mitzvah, why doesn't he list it? He didn't feel it was a separate mitzvah. He felt it was part of the laws of Arei Miklat, or the laws of criminal justice, which are mitzvahs that he lists. But in general, the Rambam does explicitly rule in the Yad HaChazaka that it is a mitzvah, and the standard interpretation seems to be that it is a mitzvah, at least in the case of Ratzeach B'Mezid. We'll see some of the later commentators seem to be not sure if we pass in like Rabbi Akiva whether there's any mitzvah at all, but the Rambam does seem to be explicit that at least in the case of Mezid, there is a mitzvah to kill to avenge the murderer. Again, when there was a Beis Din, might not be necessary. Beis Din might be taken care of, but if you don't do a Beis Din, we'll do it. But certainly this becomes of great importance when there is no Beis Din. We have to consider that the Rambam seems to be ruling that there is a mitzvah for the Gol Hadam to avenge murders. And as we'll see, many poskim took for granted, for halacha lemaisa, this was the case. Not all of them were talking about assassinations and vendettas directly. As we'll see, some of them were talking about pursuing justice through the court system and other applications of this. But many poskim did take for granted, either explicitly or tacitly, like this Rambam, that regardless of Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yossi Glili and all those shitas, there is an obligation, a mitzvah incumbent upon the Gol Hadam to avenge the murder of his relative. The Ralbag, in his commentary to the Torah 2, makes this point. He says, mitzvah biyad Gol Hadam lahamiso, he paskins it is a mitzvah. He does say, though, achash and izbar zev nigmar adin shuchayev misa. This requires clarification of the facts, and nigmar adin, apparently a formal verdict by a Beis Din that he is chayev misa. This is the Ralbag's point. It is a mitzvah, but for the mitzvah to be applicable, we require a formal verdict by a Beis Din. This point is also made, this is the question that Barbara was saying before, the question of what kind of thresholds have to be met to apply the mitzvah of Gol Hadam. A number of Achronim have argued that the mitzvah of Gol Hadam does not really apply in contemporary times due to the absence of what we would call process, the absence of what we would call due process. There are several variations of this argument. Yonasan Eibschitz in the Urim V'Tumim takes for granted that the mitzvah, I didn't copy this one here, but he says the mitzvah does not apply b'zman hazeh. He says you need a verdict, you need a capital verdict by Beis Din. Even if Beis Din is not going to implement the verdict, we don't judge capital cases, but the point is you need a verdict for Gol Hadam to be applicable, and because Beis Din does not judge capital cases, we are not authorized, our Bate Din today, Vad's Beis Din, any Beis Din, we do only civil cases, divorce, gerus, we do a certain limited subset of what Bate Din used to do in Talmudic times and biblical times. Since we are not authorized to adjudicate capital cases, that means that not just can we not actually impose a sentence, we have no jurisdiction, we can't even hear the case, we can't even issue a verdict, and therefore, since we cannot issue a formal verdict establishing that he is a murderer, therefore the law of Gol Hadam does not apply b'zman hazeh. Tzos HaChoshen and others disagree. They say there is no requirement for a formal verdict. You only need a formal verdict for a sentence that will be imposed by the Beis Din itself, insofar as we are not dealing with an actual sentence. We're giving the green light for vigilante justice. We don't need a verdict. We don't need a sentence. Obviously, the facts have to be established, and that's the point that Tzos HaChoshen gets to, which is, he still agrees, as a matter of practical halacha, to Rabbi Yonasan Eibschitz, that we still cannot do Gol Hadam. He says, because it's a similar argument, but he says, even though we don't need an actual verdict, an actual sentence, we still do need some kind of finding of fact. And that, too, he says, we're not really authorized to do. He says, Yesh L'Estapek, he's not sure. He says, we need Kabbalas Edim, we need to hear witnesses. In halacha, as we've discussed, criminal justice hinges entirely on eyewitness testimony. He says even hearing witnesses requires a certain authorization, a certain status as a Beis Din that we don't have. So he gets into technical questions about the right of a Beis Din to hear testimony b'zman hazeh on capital cases. So ultimately he arrives at least misafik, he ends tzarachiyun, he arrives at a similar position as Rabbi Yonasan Eibschitz, that we may not be authorized to adjudicate capital cases, even if we don't have to issue an actual verdict. We still have to hear witnesses and go through the formal process of fact-finding. Even that, we simply may have no authority to do, and therefore the process is not satisfied. We cannot get to a duly authorized finding of fact. And once again, both Rabbi Yonasan Eibschitz and the Tzos HaChoshen rule, misafik at least, that we should not be doing Gol Hadam b'zman hazeh. There's a fascinating tshuva on this in the Chavos Yar. The Chavos Yar is Rabbi Yarchai and Bacharach, a 17th century Central or Eastern European Achron. He was asked about a Maisa Shehaya, an actual case, unlike the Ksos and the Urban Batumim, who were writing theoretical discussions in their commentaries to the Shulchan Aruch. He was asked about an actual case, and it was a really lurid, really sensational case. There was a Jewish kid who fell into bad company, became a gangster. He committed a murder in the course of his criminal activities, was not caught, got away with it. Subsequently, he was caught. He was picked up by the authorities. Eretz Russia, he says. This happened in Russia. One of them, the crime wasn't a hit. It was apparently just a fight. They got into a crime of passion. One of them stabbed somebody and killed him. He got away with it. Subsequently, he says he was caught as a thief. He was apprehended for simple theft. In those days, they were pretty strict about theft. Theft was a capital offense. He was going to be executed in England, famously, until the 19th century. They were still killing pickpockets and sheep thieves and so on. Certainly, in the 17th century, you were still in danger of execution for theft. So the question that faced the Jewish community, this is all secular authorities. Jews were not involved in any of this. The question that faced the Jewish community, though, was what position should we take? And this is one question that has arisen several times in recent memory, the last decade or two. What position should the Jewish community take vis-a-vis this fellow's trial and impending sentence? Should we, three possibilities. Should we intervene? Should we ask for the death penalty? Should we encourage them to execute him? Should we ask for clemency? Should we ask for a commuted sentence, a mitigated sentence? Should we ask for clemency, that he should not be executed? Should we do nothing? Should we not take sides and let justice take its course? So there were those, apparently, who had argued that the mitzvah of Goel Hadam impels us to actually argue for his execution. Even though there was no verdict by a beis din that he was a murderer, there was probably not eyewitness testimony either. There was certainly no verdict. And moreover, we weren't going to be doing the execution ourselves. He was going to be killed by some European government, some European justice system. Nevertheless, there were some rabbis or some communal figures who had argued that not only should we not try to get him off, we should actually encourage his execution, because that's what the mitzvah of Goel Hadam requires. The Chavos Yair himself was strongly opposed to this. He wrote a long tshuva arguing at length that the law of Goel Hadam does not apply here and is not an argument for advocating his death. He made a number of separate arguments. One of the points was these points we made about process, similar to the Ksos and the Urim Batumim, that process has not been satisfied. We don't have a proper judicial verdict and even a proper Sanhedrin judicial finding of fact. He argues even the Goel Hadam is not permitted. Rishus means it's more like a defense in Beis Din. If the Goel Hadam kills him, we'll say he had Rishus. We won't punish him. We won't actually authorize it explicitly up front. That's a big chiddush. Most poskim seem to assume the Goel Hadam does have explicit permission to kill the Rotzeach. He makes a number of other arguments. Among others, this is a point we'll return to shortly. He says that the Goel Hadam means you can kill him yourself, but to get involved, to have the court kill him, he says, halacha frowns very much. Ideas of Mesira or the ideas of Arkos, the ideas that we don't want to involve Gentile courts in our sordid business, should not be handled by them. So for a variety of reasons, he argues that we should not be encouraging the court to execute the victim, the murderer. On the other hand, he says, should we actually encourage the court to commute his sentence, to pardon him? Also, he says he's not willing to rule that way. This already takes us into a slightly different topic, but he says no. He says at the end of the day, justice is a value. The way he phrases it is not a very modern explanation. I've discussed this before, but this is a fascinating idea. We know from ghost stories, everything from Hamlet to Harry Potter, that the souls of murdered victims do not rest until their murderers have been brought to justice. And the Chavos Yair argues this is a Jewish concept too. He acknowledges that it's a well-known folk belief that Margul Mepumei Deinshi, people say this, he says. It is, however, an authentic Jewish belief, and he brings a famous midrash, which we are going to encounter soon on Tisha B'Av, the famous story of the Dam Zecharia. There's an entire kina we say about it. It's a Gemara, it's a midrash, it's a very famous story. Zecharia was a prophet in the prophetic mode who would speak truth to power and would tell everyone that they were behaving villainously, and finally they had enough, so they murdered him. Zecharia was a Kohen and a Navi. The Midrash says this is alluded to by the Pasuk in Echa, Mihare, Kohen, V'Navi, B'Yom Echad. They killed a Kohen and a Navi the same day because it was the same person. So there's a famous story that when they executed Zechariah, they just murdered him because they were tired of his lecturing them on their evil ways. So it says his blood began to boil and it would not rest until when the enemy came to the sacked Yerushalayim and invaded the temple, and he saw the blood and he asked what's going on. So they first tried to dissemble. They told him it's animals, it's karbanos. So he tried to, using modern forensic techniques, he tried to match it. He tried to shecht the animals and compare the blood and see if it matched. It didn't match. So he began to murder Jews, and one after he killed a horrendous number of Jews, tens of thousands, until finally he told Hashem, is this what you want? Do you want me to wipe out your whole nation? Then the blood stopped, and then he was so, I think, disturbed by what he had seen and what he had done. I think he became a ger, and he ran away. But the point is, the Gemara, the Midrash, makes this point that the Dam of Zechariah was not quiet, would not rest, because until his murder had somehow become avenged. Why exactly killing tens of thousands of innocent Jews, unless they were the same ones who had been complicit, I'm not sure. But somehow, in some sense, the spirit of the murdered victim would not rest until his murder had been avenged. Similarly, the Acharonim point to the spirit of Navos. The story in Malachim is that King Achav, the villainous King Achav, murdered Navos HaYisraeli because he wanted his vineyard. That is the origin of the famous aphorism in Tanakh, Retachta v'gam Yerashta, you've murdered and now you inherit. So the Torah itself tells us, the Navi tells us, that when Achav finally died in battle, the story happened, Hashem said, who's going to go mislead Achav and send him to his death? So the spirit of Navos said, I'll do it, and he basically became the spirit of false prophecy in the Nevi'ei Sheker, and he caused Achav to enter the fatal battle and so on. But these stories and others, the several Acharonim say, is a legitimate Jewish basis for the belief that the ghost, the spirit of the murdered man, does not rest until justice has been done on the murderer. And therefore they say, we can't just say, have clemency on murderers. There's a very real need to impose justice, to settle the murder. Therefore they say that to encourage the authorities to commute his sentence is also wrong. It's not fair to the murdered man. Therefore they say, the Chavos Yair's conclusion is, Shei Val Tase, I will certainly not allow actually encouraging the government to kill him. I will also not rule that we should encourage them to let him go. Simply do nothing and let the wheels of justice run their course.
And also for Goel Adam, does he have to use one of the four forms?
That's a good question. So Aaron is referring to the fact that the capital punishment in Judaism has four forms: Skila, Sreifa, Herig, V'Chenek, stoning, burning, Herig with a knife or a sword, and Chenek, choking. The penalty for murder is Zayif, as the Rambam says, is specifically death by the knife or the sword. The government may or may not have been using the knife at that time. Does that matter? So the halacha is, in general, if it's impossible to use the proper mode of execution, you can use any of the four if it's impossible. So I don't know if he said, I believe he does, I didn't excerpt that part of the tshuva, so I'm reluctant to say from memory. I believe he does discuss that and specifically mentions this point that b'dieved, mikra din, any form of execution is acceptable. So I think he says that would not be an absolute obstacle to allowing the government to go through with whatever they were doing.
Did he discuss the fact that theft was apparently not disputed and that the punishment for that was death?
I don't recall the whole truth. I don't believe he discusses that. There are a handful of sources in a variety of contexts that do discuss the question you're raising, which is what is the halacha's attitude toward Dina Malchus Adina when it comes to criminal justice and execution in particular. The vast majority of literature on the topic of Dina Malchus Adina is in civil context, in whether it's the government's rights of taxation or of the government's right to regulate the civil affairs of the commercial affairs of the community. There isn't that much on criminal justice. There is some. I've discussed this in other contexts. There is a Gemara that says someone actually worked, one of the rabbis in the Talmud actually worked for the secular authority as an investigator, essentially. He would be catching thieves who would be executed by the government. And he defended himself. He said, I have the right to do that because Hermana de Malka. That's my position as an official of the government. There are actually many, many post-human contemporary times in the 19th and 20th century who do actually rule this as normative, that it is that they make the argument, A, that because of Din Malchusa or related principles, it is legitimate. We recognize the legitimacy of criminal justice systems of non-Jewish governments, even vis-a-vis Jewish criminals, even insofar as their laws, both in terms of substance and process, are different from Jews. Certainly the standards of evidence are very different, certainly in capital cases, and even with regard to the, and also with regard to the nature of the punishments. They kill people sometimes, certainly it used to be 100 years ago, 200 years ago, they were killing people like thieves who we do not prescribe the death penalty for. There are a variety of posts who do allow that. I don't recall if the Chavos Yair himself gets into that or not. I don't think that he does. I discussed, actually, I gave a talk on arms control last week where I mentioned the Talmud says we don't sell arms to the non-Jews. We also don't sell them the machinery of death, the electric chairs and so on. We don't sell them their different types of machinery used in executions. So the Meiri takes a very stark line about this. He actually says, because if they use it to kill a Jew, that is by definition illegitimate. They have no right to impose capital punishment on a Jew unless they're meeting all the halachic standards, which they aren't. He actually flat out says that it is not legitimate, but nevertheless, there are many poskim who do take for granted that they do have the right, the prerogative, even the duty to establish criminal justice. That's pretty standard in halacha, and that many poskim do say that applies even to Jews. Probably a topic for another day in more detail, but I don't think he gets into that. He just discusses it solely from our perspective, and he comes to the conclusion that it's staying neutral is the course he recommends.
There's a Gemara in Bava Metzia, which I think came up indirectly when you were talking about Masira a couple weeks ago, about Rabbi Elazar
Ben Shimon. Yeah, that was the one I just mentioned briefly to her. It says he worked as an investigator for the government. Said he was like a Sherlock Holmes type. He could recognize.
There was this case of some guy that he helped convict, and then he started just having second doubts about this guy, and then there was some back called that said, well, this guy was actually guilty of a capital offense anyway. You shouldn't feel so bad about it.
Right. Right. It says, I think, who? It says he was Baal, Naram, or Rasa, Yom Kippurim. Right. So that Gemara, I point out kind of the interesting enough, even though that Gemara is what we call an Agadot Gemara, nevertheless, that is the source from the Rashba, and then down to the later post, and that is one of the main sources for this idea that we're allowed to cooperate with criminal justice. The Chavos Yair himself did not bring that in, although certainly it is an important point. And the Divrei Malkiel, I should mention, one other source, the Divrei Malkiel, Malkiel Tenenbaum, late 19th, early 20th century, he also makes the same analysis that the mitzvah of Gal Hadam and the need to avenge the spirit of the victim. He wasn't talking about actually getting a guy killed. He was talking about a case of a forensic autopsy. They were going to file a criminal complaint. I think the murderer there was probably a non-Jew anyway. They were going to file a criminal complaint with the government, which would have triggered an autopsy. And they wanted to know, normally we don't do autopsies for Nivel HaMeis. The question was, is this a legitimate reason to avenge the crime? And he rules yes, and part of his argument is the need to bring peace to the spirit of the dead and the mitzvah of Gal Hadam in general. There are actually a number of other tshuvas, maybe we'll discuss at a different time, who make this basic point that cooperating with the government, even if it involves Nivel HaMeis, even if it involves autopsies, there are a number of major poskim who did allow autopsies, not always we have to do it ourselves, but at least tolerating autopsies or causing indirectly autopsies. There are a number of sources for this basic point. Rabbi Leo Kalatskin, a leading Polish authority from the early 20th century, said it's terribly wrong, he says. Relatives often are so opposed to autopsies, they will not allow it under any circumstances, even if it means letting somebody literally get away with murder, he says. It's wrong, it's against Torah. The Torah has an imperative of justice and of deterrence, and you absolutely have to allow the autopsies, he says. So many posts can make this point, that the need to avenge the murder is paramount. Now, just a couple of other important sources on the topic. One of the single most important tshuvas on Gal Hadam was a tshuva of the Tzemach Tzedek of Nicholsburg, the early Tzemach Tzedek. He was asked about a case also, a non-Jewish murderer in this case, unlike the Chavos Yair, who was a Jewish murderer, but it was a non-Jewish murderer. The question was, they wanted to bring him to justice. It required money. And today we would say it requires a lot of money. Today the prosecution is done by the state, but back then, they had to spend a lot of money to ensure that justice would be done, whether it was bribes or lawyers or paying investigators. What time is Minchat? Whether it was investigation or bribes, whatever it was, it cost a lot of money to bring a murderer to justice. So the question was, is this money well spent? Do we have to spend the money? What if we don't want it? What if we'd rather spend the money on other things? If we'd rather just, let it go already, move on. So the Tzemach Tzedek says, nope, they have to spend the money. It is a mitzvah of Gal Hadam to spend the money again, even though we're not going to be the ones physically, literally avenging it with a knife into the murderer. This is also called Gal Hadam. He feels, unlike the Chavos Yair, even if it occurs through the secular courts, it still is considered Goel Hadam. It's not necessarily a contradiction to the Chavos Yar. Chavos Yar was talking about a Jewish murderer who he felt shouldn't be tried. We shouldn't encourage his being tried in non-Jewish court. The Tzemach Tzedek was talking about a non-Jewish murderer. Maybe he belongs in the non-Jewish court. I mean, he's not Jewish himself. But either way, he takes for granted that the mitzvah of Goel Hadam can be fulfilled vicariously. As long as justice is done, even if we don't do it with our own hands, that still is considered Goel Hadam. People raised before the question of who is the Goel Hadam. He brings the language of the Rambam. The Rambam says anyone who is Ra'i for Yerusha is the Goel Hadam. There is considerable dispute about what this means. On the one hand, virtually anyone is Ra'i Lirish eventually, if nobody's in between. We discussed last week. Anyone you can just trace, as long as you have a common ancestor high enough up, common male ancestor high enough up, you're Ra'i Lirish. So who's not Ra'i Lirish? So there is a school of thought that says it just means the closest Yerush, whoever he is, the closest family members as defined by the laws of Yerusha. That seems to be the Tzemach Tzedek's position. There is no objective closeness which has to be satisfied. The closest heirs, the closest relatives, as defined by Halacha, are the Goel Hadam. Chazon Ish takes a somewhat different view. He says the Torah says, Ki Yechem Levavo. It has to do with who feels passionately. It has to do with the degree of relation. It only applies to son, daughter, father, mother, brother, sister, he said, even though not all those are actually Ra'i Lirish. A mother, as we said last week, is not Yerush. Nevertheless, the son is Yerush, the mother. The Chazon Ish basically transforms the law from having much less to do with Yerusha and much more to do with immediate relations. But others, the Aruch Haner and the Tzemach Tzedek, seem to take the Rambam at face value that it means Ra'i Lirusha means male relative of sufficiently close, not male relative, but relative through the laws of Yerusha. Whoever it is, he says, there's no objective minimum distance, and therefore, whoever is the closest, he has the chiyuv of Goel Hadam, he should be the one to do it. They have to spend money, it's a mitzvah, you have to spend money on mitzvahs, and so on. That is his position. Others discuss the question of Ein Shleichut V'Aravera, agency in halacha. Normally, you can't become an agent for an Avera, so here they say, the Goel Hadam has a mitzvah. The mitzvah doesn't apply to anybody else. For anybody else, it's just murder. So maybe Ein Shleichut V'Aravera. Others say no, but since it's a mitzvah for him, if he delegates you as his agent, then you're simply acting on his behalf. So there is some debate about whether there is an element of agency here or not, but many poskim do seem to assume that there is a concept of agency, and the Goel Hadam essentially can hire an assassin if necessary. The case they're talking about, actually, the practical case, was typically the criminal justice system, but in principle, if you were the Goel Hadam, putting aside modern American law, of course, but if you were the Goel Hadam in a society that tolerated this, you would be mekayem the mitzvah, possibly by hiring somebody else who was better at this kind of thing than you were to execute the person on your behalf. As I mentioned, just to finish up here, running out of time, but there are a number of tshuvas, largely from late medieval Germany, that indicate that Goel Hadam was actually a living law, was actually practiced in their time. Rabbi Yisrael Bruna, the Mari Bruna, 15th century Germany, wasn't clear if he's talking about a Maisa Shehaya, but he just flat out says, Afilu Shogeg, even Ortek B'Shogeg, the Goel Hadam applies, below based in, no need for any kind of finding of fact, unlike the Ksos HaChoshen or Metumim, the Chavos Yar, you don't need any based in, he says, B'chol's man, there's no limit, you don't need temple or the monarchy, Loksiv Be'Makam, the law is a living law and applies. He wasn't writing about an actual case, but we do have a couple of actual cases. Chuvah's discussing actual events. One of them is in the Maram Mirzburg, another German authority from the 15th century. He's missing a lot of details, a lot of tantalizing and fascinating details, but he talks about a case where there were Goele Hadam who chased somebody and caught him. Doesn't say what they did, but it sounds like it might have been lethal. It's hard to know. But he says they caught him and they imposed justice, frontier justice. He says, yes, he endorses it. Kedin osu goele hadam, shenokmu avihim, they avenge their father. Great. Pinchas, he says, Pinchas killed Zimri, the vigilante kind of activity. The Torah tolerates this. Good. Absolutely what they did. I condone it. No problem, he says. Now, other people objected. They had traveled outside the Tchum on Shabbos. They were so busy with their goel hadam. I don't know if they actually committed the murder on Shabbos. I don't know what about that, but tchum. They traveled outside. Maybe they locked him up and killed him after Shabbos. Maybe they just beat him up without killing him. I don't know what they did. What about tchum? They violated the tchum. So he says, also, okay, you're allowed to violate the laws of tchum to fulfill the mitzvah of Goel Hadam. He makes a very intricate argument. We're not going to get into the details, but he actually rules that the laws of tchum may actually, you can't do actual Chil Shabbos like the 39 Malachas, but the law of tchum, which is of lesser severity, you can actually violate the laws of Tchum to fulfill the mitzvah of Goel Hadam. Just one last source before we conclude here. A tshuva in the comment of the Marash Lublin, Rav Shlomo of Lublin, a 16th century Polish authority. He's not really referring to frontier justice actually knifing the murder. He's referring to the court system again, but he testifies, Mashem Medaktikin Ma'od, people are very meticulous that when a Jew is killed, they try to avenge him. They spend a lot of money. He's kind of writing in the same milieu as the Tzemach Tzedek. People were very happy to spend money to bring murderers to justice, he says. Certainly the Krovim, Gola Hadam, it's a mitzvah, he says. And even though there's Machlokes, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Akiva, that's all by Gola Hadam B'Shogeg, he says. By Mezid, it's absolutely unequivocally a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah to avenge murder, he says. Brings the Ralbag, he says, L'fikach Nagu, this was actually the custom, he says. When a Jew is killed by non-Jews, again, to my non-Jewish murderers primarily, he says, but Mishtadlim Lassus Nakama, we try hard to take revenge. Not just relatives, all Jews are considered, the tribe, he says, all Jews, Kol Yisrael, Krovim, Begolei Adam, Sfar Nechoni, again, he's not talking about vigilante justice, he's talking about making sure that the criminal justice system catches up with him, but all that, he says, is included in the mitzvah of Goel Adam.